all things new. That's what we're talking about this year. So this is our first real sermon of the year, and I wanted to talk about something uplifting. In February, we usually talk about relationships. So we have this little two-week gap, and I was like, I'm going to cover the whole book of Revelation. That's what I'm going to do. But as that got closer, I got more excited, but also it's a little bit daunting. I just wanted to talk about something uplifting, and you might not think of the book of Revelation as all that uplifting if you've ever opened it to a random page and just started reading, but it can be. So the book of Revelation is all about how does all of this get better? I think that Revelation is the culmination of all of these Bible stories of good overcoming evil. And we all want that. But unfortunately, at least in my experience, it's not this nice, steady, good, slowly pushing back evil, or light slowly pushing back darkness. It kind of like ebbs and flows. Like it goes, things start going well for a little bit, and then evil starts making a comeback, or the depression comes back, or darkness starts creeping in. It's more like cycles, right? You could call it waves. But these moments where the dark starts creeping in, we all just want to know, how does any of this get better? And we're going to focus on that word, how, today. The Revelation of Jesus Christ. So that is the full title of the book of Revelation. That's why it doesn't have an S on the end of it, as Sharon made note. The Revelation of Jesus Christ. So you can tell from the title that Jesus is the hero. It gives away the plot right at the very beginning. So it should be pretty straightforward, right, Adam? It's pretty straightforward if we know from the title what happens, right? It's pretty easy to understand. All right, so to distract us from that difficult task ahead, I'm totally going to change the subject. This Wednesday, Marquette and I had a lot of things going on. And then one of our friends from Oklahoma texted us and said, hey, is it snowing there? And I was like, no, but it did, but it was a trick. Because he was in town, and he texted me something random because he thought, if she's not busy, she'll answer this random text message. So he was in town, and he and his buddies wanted to have lunch. So we were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And then we realized we're going to go all the way up to Sandy Springs for lunch. But we had such a wonderful time with these guys from Oklahoma. And this friend of his that we had never met before, he has recently taken up flying. So he lives in small-town Oklahoma. And one of his hobbies now is kind of puddle jumping from, like, town to town in his little airplane. And he regaled us with his most latest time. He almost died. But they also do little day trips, like this time that they went to a little island that you can't get on or off of unless you fly there in one of these little planes. And I'm super afraid of flying. But, like, he started dropping in these little, like, tidbits of things that only pilots know. Like, that gas is super cheap, and to go to that little island costs, like, $12 in gas. I'm like, wow. Okay, tell me more. But of course, like, when you get there, you have to rent a car, right? And he's like, no, they have a courtesy car for pilots. I'm like, they have a courtesy car. They won't let me take a bag on the airplane. You know, like, it's so expensive for us to fly, but these little pilots, they have all these little inside things, and they take care of each other. And then he said, yeah, and then to get the keys, because a lot of these little airports are unmanned, there's a lockbox, and you have to solve a riddle. I'm like, oh my gosh, you have to solve a riddle? Sign me up. Like, I can be a pilot. I'm good at puzzles. And then he's like, no, no, no. It's like stuff only pilots would know. Like, squawk VFR. I'm like, what? And then my like confidence really tanked because I realized I was going to have to learn a lot more to ever be able to get these courtesy cars. But for a moment, I was like, oh, I could be the insider. I could know. But he said, no, if you're a pilot, you get it. But otherwise, you're not going to know the answer. You're not going to know what these riddles mean. Have you guys seen that Geico commercial? The if you ride, you get it commercials? Like, that's what that makes me think of. And that is what the book of Revelations is like. Right, so the subtitle that I've come up with, if you can read that, is a first century Jewish Christian Hebrew Bible scholar's apocalyptic dream letter. And if you are that person, then you get it. Right? First century Jewish Christian Hebrew Bible scholar's apocalyptic dream letter. Pretty simple. All right, so, but here are some of the ways that people have come to read Revelation that are some ways that people have historically seen it. It usually falls on this graph somewhere. If you can see the far, my right, your left, it says past. Are these things that are happening in the past or on my left, your right? Are these things that are going to happen in the future? Marquette's congratulating me on my left and right. are these things that have all already come to pass? Have some of them happened? Have none of them happened? Is it going to come to pass in the future? And then top to bottom, is it a decipher? So what I mean by that is one image in Revelation equal to one thing in the real world, right? Like the beast is one thing, right, that we're looking out for. Or towards the bottom of the graph, it says poetic. Or is this highlighting big themes and we are to look out for things that are characteristics like these things in the book of Revelation? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's either one for one or it's like themes. And where you land on this becomes your lens for how you're reading the book of Revelation. So let's talk about one important way that we should read it. One thing we have to take into consideration is the context of what this book is. So first of all, what I said was it's apocalyptic. And apocalypse, what does that mean?
Zombies.
Scary.
End.
I'm ignoring Joey because he got it right. Joey said it means reveal. So actually, the word revelation and apocalyptic are the same, right? So to pull back the curtain, to see clearly, it doesn't mean anything about an end or a conclusion. It just means simply to see, to reveal. And apocalyptic is a style of writing that was very popular. There are different parts in our Old Testament that are also apocalyptic. And the way that these are used is they use big dramatic images to help break people out of the way that they typically see the world. So you can think of like spoken word poetry or something. Or sometimes comedians do this when they do stand-up. They say things that are a little bit jarring, and you're like, oh man, that's got some truth to it, right? So apocalyptic is this way of writing that is supposed to help us shift out of the way we typically see our world and see it from more of a divine perspective, right? The way the world looks if God's looking down on it. All right, we also have to remember that this is a letter. So this is a letter from someone to someone, and it is addressing the context that these people are living in. You're not going to write a letter for no reason. So something about the contents of the book of Revelation is helpful. It is helpful to these churches. This is a really important one. It's written by a Hebrew Bible scholar. So that means that it is woven. Oh, it's also a dream. So imagine how a Hebrew Bible scholar dreams. So this happens in our own dreams, where you try and tell someone what happened in your dream, and you're like, and all of a sudden, I was on Mars, and a second ago, I was just in the cafeteria, and I don't know how I got, like, there was no transition point, but I was just there, and you were there, but you didn't look like you. Dreams. Okay, so Hebrew Bible scholar. He's taking all of, so he knows every single story in the Old Testament, and he is taking images from all of those stories, and he's weaving them together. And so when someone who knows the Hebrew Bible really well reads this, they're like triggered over and over and over again for these different themes that they know from the Old Testament. And that's just something we can't appreciate because we don't know the stories backwards and forwards like they did. All right, another thing to remember is it's written as an encouragement. So if you're reading this book for yourself and you realize, like, this is not very encouraging to me, maybe you're coming at it from the wrong perspective, right? If it starts making you scared or worried, then it's not communicating to you the thing that it was meant to communicate to the churches at the time. So we should, like, take a step back and figure out why that is. All right, lastly, it was written to real churches. And what was going on with these churches? All right, so today we're talking... Oh, you like his little glasses? All right, today we're talking about the story we tell ourselves about how things get better. These churches were facing hard times. They were having to choose between this, like, faithfulness to this way of Jesus that they had been taught. It had been years after Jesus had died, after Jesus had been around. So they're having to faithfully commit to this way of Jesus, or kind of just go back to the way everyone else is living. So in these hard times, when we face hard times, what are the story that we're telling ourselves about that hard time? Right? So one of the things that John is doing in the book of Revelation is he's trying to uncover, reveal to the churches the way that they're thinking about their own hard time. So when we have hard times, what are some of the things that we tell ourselves about those hard times? I came up with a few. These might show you something. It'll never get better. I'm alone. God isn't there. Bad people get to do whatever they want. Nobody cares. Right? These are some of the stories that we tell ourselves about hard times. And what the churches were facing was they were having to make a choice between faithfulness to the gospel of Jesus versus, quote, the spirit of the Roman age, which is kind of like buying into whatever is popular at the time, whatever the narrative is at the time that they think will make the world better, right? So there's Jesus's way of making everything better, and then there's the way that is, like, kind of in vogue right now. So things like might makes right, scheming for influence to try and, like, have your way, even if it's, like, for a good cause, right? It all depends on us, right? What else? What are other ways that we try and, like, make our world better?
Everybody else is doing it.
Everybody else is doing it. Anything else?
If I don't do this bad thing, somebody else will do it.
Right, right. If I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it, as far as, like, a bad thing goes, right? There's no difference in me doing it versus somebody else doing it. I might as well get the benefit.
Right.
Yeah. Right, it's all subjective. Who can tell me what's right? All right, so we're going back to this ways to read Revelation. And one thing that I'm going to propose is that reading Revelation, when you read it and when you learn the story that it is trying to tell, it becomes your glasses, your new way of seeing everything. Let me tell you more about that. All right, so what is the story? We're going to zoom way out because we're just scratching the surface of Revelation. Don't ask me to dig too much deeper. There are people who study this for their whole lives and still don't have all the answers to what all these things mean. So Right, or any answers. Thanks, Sharon. What is the story? What is the story that Revelations is trying to tell us? Sorry if that's so small. Is it a Cinderella story? Is it a David and Goliath type story? Is it a Superman story? Right? So any of these story types, these genres of stories, give us some sort of expectation. So if it's a David and Goliath type story, you expect that the giant's going to fall, right? If it's a Superman story, what happens? You're waiting around for some superhero to come fly in and make it all better, right? So these stories set our expectations. So what kind of story is the book of Revelation? It's a gospel story.
That wasn't one of the choices.
No. You had to wait for me to push all the buttons. Right. I had to tell you what the answer was. All right, so we ended up reading chapter 5 today, and I don't know if you guys can see this. We can zoom in on it a little bit later. Can you see my little pointer guy?
Yeah.
All right, so in chapter 5, we're in the throne room. So John is having a vision, a dream, and there is all of these figures from Old Testament stories surrounding God's throne. And God has a scroll. And the scroll is representing how does all of this get better, right? So inside the scroll is the blueprint. It's the plan, the master plan for how good overtakes evil. So who, if it's not the prophets, if it's not all of these people from the Old Testament, who is worthy to open the scroll for all of us to finally know the answer for how all of this gets better? And this is John right here. Right. So first, John hears is the Lion of Judah, the root of David. So this happens a couple of different times. John hears something, but then sees something different. So the lion is worthy. But then what John turns and sees is the slain lamb, which is representative of Jesus in this story. So who is worthy to open the scroll? We all have this expectation of this lion, this heir of David from the Old Testament. But when John turns and looks, instead, it is this humble figure, this slain lamb. And it is the sacrifice and the humility and love of this slain lamb that ends up being the ticket for conquering evil. So this little image right here, this story is cyclically repeated in Revelation. Over and over and over again. So what John is doing in the book of Revelation is he's telling this same gospel story in different ways, trying to teach people how to see the pattern, how to see the pattern in the past, how to see the pattern in the present, and how to look for that same pattern in the future. So the elements...
What was the thing in the bottom right corner with the spiky air?
Which one? This is the God figure. See it? So then the lamb is sitting next to the God figure, to the throne. Okay. So that's all right. Elements. So we're going to look at a couple more examples of how John does this repeatedly in Revelation. So what are the elements of a gospel story that we're looking for? Evil is strong and chaos rules. We have an expectation that the mighty one will come and conquer evil. But in reality, God humbly offers a sacrificial gift of love. So our expectation is not met. It's not in the way that we imagined. Good appears to be defeated. But evil is overcome by goodness.
Amen.
So those are the elements of this gospel story that John, in the book of Revelation, with all of these Hebrew images, is trying to point out to his readers. All right, so then we go on, and John tells the same thing over and over again with different images. So chapters 6 and 7, evil and chaos. So there's war and conquest and famine and death and just a typical day in the life of humanity, right? So chaos is reigning. There's an expectation. He hears of an Israelite army coming that numbers 144,000. And this is from the book of Numbers, right? And so he has this expectation of this Israelite army of God coming to defeat the chaos. But in reality, what he ends up seeing is this multi-ethnic crowd of people who have all been redeemed by Jesus as fulfilling the promise that God made to Abraham, be a blessing to all nations. So he heard one thing, but what he turned and saw in reality was something different. But unfortunately, a lot of those people suffer. They don't come to fight. They suffer just like the lamb did. And then their sacrifice is what ends up bringing the day of the Lord, where all creation is reordered. So in chapter 6 through 8, you see this story replay. Let's do it one more time. All right, chapters 8 through 11. He's retelling the Exodus plagues, the evil and chaos, and we're expecting God to bring judgment like God did on Pharaoh. But if we remember, with Pharaoh, God's harsh judgment was not effective, right? It just made Pharaoh harden his heart. So there's an expectation God will be harsh, like in Exodus. But in reality, John sees the open scroll. So the scroll's opened. And in this open scroll, where it's supposed to be describing how good overcomes evil, instead, what you see is the temple is destroyed and there's suffering of God's people inside this open scroll. That's not what you want to see. It appears that good is defeated. So then there are these two witnesses that come. And these two witnesses are representing the church, and they get killed. And that's not what you want to see in this story either. But then God brings the witnesses back to life, and this causes many nations to turn back to God. So if you see this gospel narrative repeating over and over in the book of Revelation, let's talk about what was inside the scroll. The scroll is how God's kingdom will become real on earth. How is all of this going to get better? God's harsh judgment didn't bring about change. Didn't bring about change in Egypt, and doesn't bring about change in the future. God's harsh judgment did not bring about repentance. Inside the scroll, it shows the mission of the church is not to be harsh, but to imitate the slain lamb, Jesus. In lovingly and sacrificially showing mercy to their enemies. And it is the mercy of the church that brings healing to the nations. What a good story. What a good story, the book of Revelation. So that is just barely scratching the surface. So next week, the beast, 666, the dragon, and the woman in labor. Okay, we'll see what we can cover next week. But let's talk about the story we tell ourselves, right? So if John's message to these churches is like, think about the gospel story, think about the story that you're telling yourself about how all of this gets better. We also have a choice between faithfulness to the way of Jesus, this gospel story, or our, quote, spirit of the Roman age. What is our spirit of the Roman age, or the way we want to bring about change? This is interactive at this point. Sarah?
We believe in redemptive violence.
Yeah, redemptive violence.
Get more power.
Get more power so we can get more done.
Right, make people do what you want.
My tribe wins.
Be part of the strongest tribe. Revenge. Yeah, using shame to make change. Yeah, that's right. It's a big one. All right. So how can we begin to see our story differently if we're in the midst of a hard time, which we all are, right? How do we begin to imagine that things get better? And that's just a rhetorical question. But the ways that you're feeling about your world and the solutions that you have in mind, are those lining up with this gospel narrative? And that's really hard, because in the middle of the story, it looks like good loses. It looks like the nice people get trampled, right? And that's a really hard story to want to be a part of. One thing I want to tell you is don't be discouraged if your expectations aren't met. Because what we're learning from this gospel story is to expect that our expectations will not be met, that God will show up in a way that we never imagined. But in the end, the humility, love, and goodness of God is what triumphs evil.